Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, and away we go on this Tuesday. It's August the 8th, 2023. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy John, engineering and producing our program. Hard to believe, but in January, we'll begin our 14th year with our radio project in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. The radio station is 1030 KVOI, Tucson's trusted source for news and talk, worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com, where we piggyback the live feed from KVOI.com. Our live line for our telephone interviews, presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Let's go right now on the live line. He is the Pima County Superintendent of Schools, midway through his second four-year terms, lifelong Tucsonan, educator himself, spent time, plenty of time in the classroom. Here he is, Dustin Williams. Dustin, how are you, sir?
Bill, fantastic. You're giving me goosebumps. I love being on your show, and I love your listeners. Hope you're well.
Thank you very much. Here we go with another school year. Most of the schools. Refresh our listeners about how many schools you have in the portfolio, and the vast majority already now in session, Superintendent?
Yep, we're all back and running. Everyone's full speed. There's about approximately 375 schools in Pima County, about 150,000 K through 12 grade students, all putting in the work with a bunch of educators and a bunch of moving parts. And we don't touch them all, but we have pieces for the majority of all the districts. But we do work with districts, charters, private, and the homeschool community.
Dustin, what is your take on school year 2023-24 as we're off and running? What's your overview?
You know what? We've got something that's really unique politically is we don't have that aggregated expenditure limit debacle that we've had to work with for the last 2-3 years because that got passed in the finance budget this year. So that monkey off the back means schools can focus. Educators can stay focused on the job, not have to worry about big budget cuts. The other side of the coin is everyone is really excited. It's another full year of normalcy away from that nasty pandemic. It, still lingers in certain spots, and it will, but we've got that really under control. And kids are just excited. Teachers are back. Summer's done. It's really exciting to see all the smiling faces come back and all of the parents getting ready to go through the motions of getting their kiddos to campus every day.
We've got to improve those scores, though, don't we?
Yeah, we still have a long road to go no matter what in education. We've got some math issues building that bridge of making sure we have high-quality teachers to make sure that these students are getting the test scores that they need for math so that they're college-ready. So that seems to be an area where we're still really trying to work with the universities, Pima Community College, and the schools to make sure that those schools are especially math ready when they go into that post-secondary experience.
How many students drop out, do you think, out of high school in Pima County? I know it's been a huge problem. The pandemic, Dustin Williams, didn't help things. What's your ballpark figure on kids that just decide they're not going to finish high school?
So you've got two numbers. Statistically, you've got graduation rates somewhere in that 78 percentile, right around there, typically in the state. And everyone fluctuates a little bit. What that number looks in Pima County, it could be somewhere in maybe that 3 total, this would be total because there's probably approximately, 12,000 students, a little bit more, maybe around 2,000, 3,000. But when students get into what's called career and technical education, where they take trade schools in high school, that graduation rate, that statistic jumps from around 75-78% to about 95% and
wow.
Higher.
That is really, really interesting that if you add the technical component, that really jumps.
it's a massive, you don't see these increases in business, period. So to see it in the education sector, we'll take that. So all the kids in high school and all the parents, it seems to be an extracurricular activity. Students really get into it, and it's just one more piece of education that makes a student get excited about school and want to go. Not that we all don't get excited about going to Algebra 2 or pre-calculus, but when you're learning a trade like computer sciences or biosciences or medical field or electrician, carpenter, diesel mechanic, these kids not only learn a skill, they get a certificate, but they're job ready right out of high school, and they can start making somewhere along the lines of $40,000 a year with these certificates. Plus employers, they might even pay for some schooling if they decide to bring their trade craft over to their employment area.
Boy, we've got so many questions on Friday for Tom Horn, who will be our Friday Focus interview. Very controversial administration of Mr. Horn concerning school vouchers, this curriculum hotline, the dual language programs. How are you navigating the political waters, Dustin Williams?
That's a great question, Bill, because the most important thing that you can do as an elected leader, especially in our type of office where we are, heavily administration, we're here to support local decision. You don't want to divide anything. So once you start getting confusion and division, you're losing track of what we're trying to do, which is make sure that schools run smoothly. So as some of those controversial items that you mentioned, vouchers and dual language and different aspects under the Horn administration, it clouds what's going on in the day-to-day operations for internals. Your internals have to run really smooth for school to run good, for the teachers and making sure that the students have everything they need. So best to be united, work together, really follow directions of what schools need, because they're unique. There's not a one-size-fits-all, and you have to really, really depend on that local leadership, those superintendents and those elected governing board members, to kind of dictate what you need or what they need, and then you go find those resources for them, and then you build the systems and processes that make it smooth. So you got to really be laser-focused on systems and processes, and you got to somehow try to get the politics out of the scenario. You're going to do a lot better for the students, the educators, and the constituents. A lot of constituents are just getting really tired of the political games and negative, negative commentaries that are out there. They just want to focus and do good stuff.
How about our teachers? What's this teacher shortage look like as we begin school year here?
We got two areas, again, to really focus on. Good. I'd say the vacancies are good. They're okay. They're not great. We have them in, again, different pockets, different districts. But there's two areas that we really want to talk about, which are the special education teachers and then the high-quality, high-level math teachers. Those two industries, especially special education, are low. We've got to figure out a way in this state to bolster those numbers. It's going to be two factors. It's going to be salary, and then it's going to be working conditions with support. Those two types of education, especially special education, really, really are on the critical list for me on that state level of how are we making sure we're supporting those students, those parents in those schools and in those sectors.
How about the infrastructure, the buildings themselves, Dustin Williams?
Yeah, you're seeing the industry, when you don't fund it, and it hasn't been funded correctly for a long time, it's just like the normal wear and tear on your homes and your cars. If you don't keep up on that maintenance, it gets broken. And so now what we're seeing is a lot of schools did get some COVID money, or what they called CARES dollars. That really helped. That's all coming to an abrupt end here by the end of 2024. So a lot of them got to put some money into their schools and their infrastructure, and it was really helpful, but it wasn't enough. This has been years and years of underfunding education. So you're going to see schools go out for bonds and overrides, And in those bonds and overrides, a lot of those dollars go directly to the infrastructure to bring in those buildings up to speed, up to par. You got to have a really nice atmosphere for the education system to work. If the buildings are dilapidated, it's really, really hard to bring in world-class education if you don't have the right infrastructures. So support your school's bonds and overrides. Support legislators that want to fund our school facilities boards and our buildings to make sure that we can get everything up to speed and run the way we want to run.
All right, final message, less than a minute to go. Dustin, what about parents? Can they always call your office?
100%. We want parents to know that we're your partner. Schools.pima.gov. You can follow us on Facebook, all that stuff. You can get a hold of me. I take my door is always open. If you have a great idea, if you have a challenge, you have a concern, we want to be here to be your partner. We want to help. Schools.pima.gov. And parents, take a big deep breath. Those kids are going to make it the first week here. It's going to be a great year.
Do you miss being in the classroom, Dustin?
I do. I'm not going to lie. It never leaves your bones, especially when you've got them looking you in the eye and you see those twinkles and you see the learning. It's just right there every day and you build those relationships. It's a very intimate process. It's really something you can't explain. It's got some magic to it. So, yep, I'm always going to miss those kiddos in the classroom, but that's why we've visited over 300 schools. We get to still get out there a lot and be with them, and it makes me really happy.
All right, Dustin Williams, thank you very much, Pima County Superintendent of Schools. Good year with good luck with the new year. We'll check with you down the road here. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is working with the Citizens Advisory Committee to prepare and present a new draft plan as early as 2023 for public review. Learn more about the process at rtanext.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Thinking about a river cruise? Let Bon Voyage Travel guide you to choose the perfect cruise to complement your vacation dreams. River cruising has become more popular than ever, and we know you have so many options to consider when selecting the destination, cruise line, and ship. At Bon Voyage Travel, we provide a comprehensive presentation on the top tips for river cruises and have a team of specialists to assist you. Visit bvtravel.com and view our River Cruise 101 presentation today.
Shelley Fishman is a financial consultant in private practice in Tucson, Arizona. The views expressed during this segment are his own and don't necessarily represent those of this station or of Bill Buckmaster Communications. Contact Shelley through buckmastershow.com or at shelleyfishman.com.
And Shelley is on enjoying himself on vacation up in the high country of Colorado. We thought, though, a segment that Shelley did on picking a financial advisor was worth another listen. Advisors, when you look at a financial, you say you've got an advisor, you're maybe not that happy with the direction. When is it time to maybe go a different way?
Well, clearly, one of the things that makes you want to look for a new advisor is you move. Mm-hmm. You move from one city to another city, and so you'd rather not have a long-distance relationship with an advisor. That's one thing. The other thing is, for whatever reason, you're unhappy with the advisor you have. Now, that doesn't mean that's a bad advisor. It just means that the chemistry between you and that advisor has gone south. So one of the things I always tell people, and I get calls still, even though I'm mostly retired, mm-hmm. I get calls, and I got one this morning from somebody who found me, you know, found my website, found that I had been a CFP, and said, you know, are you taking clients? And I said, no, well then, you know, how should I look mm-hmm. for somebody? And, mm-hmm. and the first thing that I advise is if you're looking for a new advisor, don't skimp on the interviews. You know, make interviews with three different advisors, and make it easy for yourself, you know, in offices that are where you can get to easily. Two of the three, I think, and I'm prejudiced in this respect, two of the three ought to be CFPs. Now, being a CFP doesn't make you smarter than anybody else, doesn't make you better educated than everybody else. But it does do one thing that is very important. It means that the advisor is under written obligation to take a fiduciary role in the advice that he or she gives you. What is a fiduciary role? It means that the advisor must put his or her interests as subordinate to you, the client.
Mm.
Okay, now, there are lots of people who will say, we take a fiduciary responsibility, but then the question is, do I get that in writing?
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, it's still a loosey-goosey kind of thing, but it's a good idea, I think, to have one or two of the people you're interviewing being CFPs.
Certified financial planners. Who have to meet certain standards, and you've got to take a test.
And 6 months of classes and all of that. But it doesn't necessarily mean that you're a better advisor than anybody else. So when you sit down with an advisor, there's a couple of things that you should look for. The first thing is, do you feel comfortable with that person? You need to be able to communicate openly, and this is the key, never feel intimidated. Because I've heard, well, you're the expert, I don't know anything.
Yeah, I don't know anything.
You know, it's like being intimidated by your doctor. Mm. Nonsense. They're the expert, you're the customer.
Yeah.
And
as the customer, you need to ask questions.
Clearly.
And whether it's medical or financial.
Right, even if those you know, questions might seem to you to be a little off-putting.
Mm-hmm.
Nevertheless, it's your responsibility to yourself and your family mm-hmm. to make sure that you get your questions answered. The next thing is to ask for documentation. Now, what kind of documentation? Lots of people have, you know, published stuff that they will give their clients about where they got, you know, where they were educated, how long they've been in business. If they have any complaints against them, now you can. That's all public information. You could look it up on the web and get the name of the form is a U-4. But if you ask a person you're interviewing for their U-4 or their essentially resume, you know, they'll go into their drawer full of stuff and give you that. And it's because it's checkable. It's public information. You can believe what's down in writing.
You said U-4.
Yeah, that's a form that is filed with the
government
regulatory agencies,
okay.
Both the SEC and okay. There's one other. It's escaping me at the moment.
Okay, but it's called a U-4. All right.
But you can look that up online as well.
Okay.
The third thing is you have to know and get this out of the way very, very quickly. how that advisor charges for his or her services. Now, there are several ways to charge for their services. You know, one way is to charge you a fixed percentage of the total assets under management. If you do a lot of trading, that's a great way to be charged because you don't pay for every trade. The other way to get charged is when you make trades. There are also some products that advisors will recommend from time to time to their clients that are commissionable to the advisor. You usually don't pay out of pocket as the client, but the advisor gets paid, and sometimes very richly, for selling those products.
So clearly these are products with a profit center for the advisor.
Clearly, they can be. Yeah. But again, if you trust the fact that you have hired a fiduciary, then those products might be the most appropriate thing for you, or in the mix, the most appropriate thing for you. And the kind of products I'm talking about here are mostly insurance products. They're life insurance. They can be annuity products. They can be long-term care insurance. They're things that you might, in fact, need and want to have part of the mix. But you should know that the advisor gets paid very nicely for selling those products. The other kind of product that's sometimes in the mix is third-party management products. Not all advisors do this, but there are third-party management firms who assemble expertise from different parts of the industry and offer management styles and management techniques that meld the advice from several third parties into a package that you can buy and mix and match. They charge for that, and you pay that right off the top. But it gives you a tremendous amount, I think, of confidence that you're getting teams of people who are doing research that you or your advisor could never do on your own. And now, does that guarantee that you're going to be a big winner? No. But it guarantees that you're going to get a whole bunch of expertise that you wouldn't ordinarily have. So that's some of the products you can get. One of the things I think is important, and you know, some of my friends kick me when I say this, is I like the idea that an advisor should be independent of any brand manufacturer. So if the advisor works for an insurance company or works for one of these big banks that do their own, mutual funds or
yeah, their own product
funds,
lines,
their own product line, then you have to worry whether the advisor is being better compensated when they sell their own products rather than go outside and get other products. So you got to ask those questions and be very clear about the answers. Don't guess. In the initial interview with an advisor, the advisor at some point is going to stop you from asking questions and start asking questions of you. Very important that you level with the advisor. Let the advisor know why you're changing. Let the advisor know what your objectives are. Let the advisor know how often you want to meet with him or her, what your expectations of the relationship are. And if you're not getting good answers or answers that really satisfy you, you know, go to the next interview. Another thing that people don't think about, advisors are human beings. They go on vacation or they have, you know, their schedules are fully booked and you want to get in. So you need to know what the backup plan is, you know, who you can meet with at that advisor.
Whether they have somebody that they call upon.
Exactly. So very quickly, because I know that the time is short here, once you've chosen an advisor, then there's some steps you need to go through. One of those steps is you're going to be offered a detailed financial plan by that advisor, either something that they charge for, or they'll guide you to an online site that allows you to do the input and get a plan. Now, the plan is not a set of rules that you have to stick with necessarily, but the process of going through the input into a detailed financial plan is very, very useful. And I would never skip that.
How detailed should you go as the client into your particular investment portfolio with someone who you are interviewing, and you may not go with that person?
That's a great question, Bill. Talking generalities, do not get into
your particular
specifics. These are very personal things.
Yes.
Once you have chosen an advisor, however, you know, you open up the kimono, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. you know, do not hold back.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing to remember is when you're changing advisors, you may be selling stuff that you think hasn't been winners for you, and or you know, just changing from your prior advisor's strategies to the, you know, current advisor strategies. Be careful about tax impacts. If it's an IRA or 401k, then you don't have to worry about that. But if it's a non-qualified account, that is a non-retirement designated account, there's going to be tax implications every time you buy and sell stuff.
Yep.
So be really careful about that. The other thing I always say is, remember, there is a monster on your shoulder whispering in your ear, and that monster is called greed. Be aware that greed is pushing your decisions, and you must avoid that.
Shelly Fishman, great advice. Thank you, Shell.
Great. Have a great week, Bill.
All right. We'll be back in a minute.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rialto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here. ¶¶
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show and the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios, our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. The following segment is presented by Reed Park Zoo, founded in 1965 by the then City of Tucson Parks Director Gene Reed, as an exhibit of exotic birds. Well, the zoo has become one of America's top zoos, with over 300 animals from all over the world welcoming some 500,000 visitors annually. With us on the live line, Stephanie Norton. Stephanie is the Reed Park Zoo Animal Welfare Specialist. Hey, Stephanie, how are you?
Hey, I'm good. How are you?
Doing well. We all know that excellent care is provided for all of the animals at the zoo, but today the care is expanding to a whole new standard to focus on animal well-being. What the heck is that all about?
Yeah, so animal well-being is a term that we use to encompass really everything that goes into the animal's day-to-day life. So we're looking at things like nutrition, their medical care and health, enrichment, so anything that we give to them to keep them active and mentally stimulated, and then also their behaviors. So we're looking at what kinds of behaviors are they doing, and are they behaving the way normal, healthy animals should?
So how do the animal care staff, you and your team, promote this kind of animal well-being on really a day-to-day basis, 24/7?
Yeah, there's a lot of different ways that we do that. We do provide all of the animals, they get a monthly welfare assessment. So we look at their well-being every month. We have a database that helps us to track that information. It's one of the newest tools that we're sharing with other zoos. It's really incredible, so that we can see how those things change over time. And then we're also looking at things like their temperature requirements. So right now, with it being summer, it's really warm out, and we're providing them with extra ice pops that they can use to cool down, air conditioning, and fan setup, misters. So it's really looking at all of those different ways that we can provide for their environment to keep them really comfortable and happy and healthy.
You have such a large portfolio of animals, such diversity, and I'm just wondering if some of the animals present more of a challenge, Stephanie, than others, perhaps?
It really depends. I don't know that there's many that provide more of a challenge, but there are definitely some we have to get more creative with. So some of those animals do take a lot more enrichment, or a larger animal like an elephant does take a considerable more amount of food than some other animals. So it's really working with all the departments to make sure that all of the animals are cared for in a really great way.
And some of the animals, well, I'm sure this with the record-breaking heat that we've had in July and really carried over into August last weekend. How do you prepare for that, and how do you make your animals more comfortable, Stephanie?
Yeah, we do a lot of the different fans or coolers. A lot of times you'll be able to see the animals out earlier in the morning when it's cooler out. And so we do open the zoo earlier during the summer so that it's a better time for guests as well as the animals to be out in the heat. A lot of them will have choice on if they want to go into their behind-the-scenes areas where they might have some different options for shade or cooling. But we also provide all those same options out on habitat as well so that they can have just a wide range of ways to stay cool.
You know, you mentioned that the whole package, the total animal well-being package, includes kind of their mental health as well. How do you monitor that? Are there certain signs that animals can give off that they're perhaps stressed or not doing well? I mean, I'm just curious how that works.
Yeah, so we look at a lot of the behaviors that they're showing, like you said, and one of the things that we look for is that they're doing all of the different natural behaviors that we would expect to see from an animal in the wild. We want to see all those same behaviors happening in human care. So we're looking to make sure that they're resting the amount they should be, that they're maybe foraging for food the same amount that they should be as well, and that they're really engaged with their environment and that they spend a lot of time doing those active behaviors that we would expect, and really just showing us that they're comfortable, that they're relaxed, and that they're happy with what they're doing that day.
We're speaking with Stephanie Norton. Stephanie is an animal welfare specialist at Tucson's Reed Park Zoo. And we've seen on social media a lot of exciting things coming up, welcoming a new animal to the South American Loop exhibit. Who's coming?
Yeah, we're very excited to welcome a new two-toed sloth to our South America section of the zoo. That habitat will be opening up on August 15th, so guests will be able to come by and see him at that point. We're very excited to have him. It's been a long time since we've had a sloth at the zoo. He is fairly good at resting, so he might be a little hard to see at times, but he also can be a little bit active on occasion. So definitely guests should come by and check him out. He is a brand new habitat that was just built thanks to the community and the tax initiative that was passed in 2017. So he has a beautiful new habitat space with inside and outside options, again, so he can work on making sure that his temperature is comfortable for him. And we're getting everything finished up and putting all his fun new perching and areas for him to rest and climb, and getting all that set up before the 15th.
Other than the obvious, we know they're slow-moving sloths. What else can you tell us about this particular animal?
Yeah, he is slow-moving, but he is very dynamic. So he actually is one of the keeper's favorites already. He really loves some of his favorite foods, which are blueberries, zucchini, and occasionally he gets a special sloth diet that he really enjoys. So that's made, formulated for sloths, that has all the vitamins and nutrients that he needs in it as well. He's a very good climber, and he really likes to investigate new things when we put them into his habitat space with him. Of course, that is when he wakes up from his naps to go check those things out.
His frequent, very frequent naps. You know, I was thinking about dietitians and all of the different animals, and everybody's got different requirements. That must be very challenging.
Yeah, so that's something that our veterinary team monitors really closely to make sure that all those requirements are met. And not only that they're met by what we provide, but that the animals are actually eating enough of each of those foods in order to make sure that they do have a really healthy, balanced diet.
You've got a great rounding out the calendar here of summer. Let's talk about some of these special events that will be coming up in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, so we have two last summer safari nights coming up this week. They'll be on Friday night and Saturday night from 6 to 8 p.m. So that's another great option for guests to come by when it's a little bit cooler. It's also cooler for the animals, so they may be out more often then. And we have live music and other fun activities happening. And then Saturday is World Elephant Day. So our elephant team is doing a bunch of really fun activities and providing information to guests about all the different ways that we can help protect these amazing animals in the wild. And then also, speaking of elephants, so our older sister, Elephant Nandi, who was born here at the zoo, and she's the first African elephant born in Arizona, she's going to be turning 9 soon. So we're going to have a little birthday bash for her. So it's a mud-themed birthday, and it will be on August 19th from 8 to 11. Mud bathing is one of her favorite activities to do, so we will have some fun events like having a mud pit that guests, children can play in and have some time to get dirty like an elephant. We'll also have some fun snacks and things available, cookies, and some just really great activities for everyone to come by and check out.
I can't saying, I can't believe Nandi is already 9 years old.
I know. She's gotten so big so fast, and her little sister is getting big right behind her, Penzi. Mm. So that's very exciting to watch happen.
Tell me a little bit here as we wrap this up. I'm just curious, Stephanie Norton, how what attracted you to kind of the animal world environment, animal welfare specialist. How did that come about for you?
Yeah, I've always loved working with animals. Ever since I was a little kid, I've always had animals that I've, you know, taken care of and worked with. And when I got older and I attended the University of Arizona, I studied animal science there, and I actually got to do an internship through the university with the zoo. So that's how I started working at the zoo here at Reed Park Zoo, and really got just sort of nurtured this love of animals and getting to spend time working with these amazing creatures.
Is that a growing field for young people to go into?
It is. I think all of the conservation-focused fields are really important and things that that the younger generations are starting to really look towards and different ways that they can contribute to conservation and protecting the environment.
Had a great conversation with Stephanie Norton. Thank you, Stephanie.
Thank you.
And folks can get more details on the Reed Park Zoo, and I hope you will visit their fine website. The website is reedparkzoo.org for more information. Again, thanks to Stephanie Norton, the Reed Park Zoo Animal Welfare Specialist. Take a break. Be right back.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com. The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA tax is collected throughout Pima County and averages about $100 million in revenue each month. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation projects in the region. The RTA tax funds priority projects that were approved by voters in 2006. See details in the latest RTA annual report at rtamobility.com. Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We are also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
This is Kate Delaney. Tune in later tonight as we talk about everything that happened throughout your day. Tonight at 10 on 1030 KVOI, The Voice.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Stop by Green Things at 3384 East River Road for all of your gardening needs. And I don't know about your garden, but my garden's looking pretty sad after the 2 1-in-100-year events, weather events, that hit our neighborhood all within 2 weeks. And that hail did not go well with lots of the plants. So Green Things can take care of your update, your garden 2.0 updating for the kind of, as we wind down. I hope we're not winding down the summer rainy season already, but it hasn't been great, has it? GreenThingsAZ.com and their sister business, ZocaloVillage.com. Also, if you're looking to get away from the heat, who isn't, right? 3-hour drive east of Tucson, great environment over in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. Lots of history over there. And here's the good news. It's going to be cooler because Silver City is about 5,500 feet, which means I'm usually in the ballpark of 10 to 15 degrees cooler over in Silver City. And look at that, still in the 80s, upper 80s at midday in Silver City. Let's bring in historian Ken Scoville, one of 24 or so regular contributors to our program. Ken, how are you?
Oh, just warm like everybody else.
Yeah, it's been one for the history books this summer, I'll tell you. I'll be glad to see it in the rearview mirror. August is really the month we talk a lot about Tucson history. Of course, it's the Tucson's birthday, August 20th. When you think about Tucson's birthday, what comes to mind, Ken Scoville?
Well, I guess what comes to mind most of all, besides the fact that we started as a Spanish fort, and before that, for thousands of years, Native people along the Santa Cruz, I always want to say that, is that we're fast approaching Tucson's 250th birthday and thinking about all the change that has gone on. And I'm really thinking this hotter cycle we're in, we've had more wind than we've ever had in the summers. I don't think it's a one-shot deal.
I tend to agree with you, and that's unfortunate because our neighborhood up in central foothills has really been the epicenter of these terrible windstorms, and we've lost the trees that are easily 100 years old on our property, and neighbors losing the roof or part of the roof. I don't see it, Ken, as an anomaly, and I'm worried, frankly.
Right, and you know, I know you wanted to talk about change today, and it's interesting how the weather could change so much about Tucson. I mean, I probably should mention to people, modes of transportation over the last, up to the last 250 years, up to the present day, has been the automobile, or first of the arrival of the train, the automobile, and then I listened to your airport, Tucson International Airport ad, the airplane, but mainly the automobile. But Tucson really took off because we had water, but we really had a very nice climate and a manageable summer. And we don't know how Tucson's going to grow and change in the future with declining water issues and warming up. And that's going to be a very fascinating thing to see how Tucson, and we have Phoenix as sort of the model, but I think Phoenix is going to get much hotter. And we may be Phoenix in possibly another 10 years, terrible thing to think.
No, I think you're on to something here. And I reflect on my own time coming here as a kid from Chicago out to the University of Arizona from in the late 60s. And usually I would go home, thank goodness, to kind of get away from the summer and sit on the beach at Lake Michigan. But I did spend a summer here in the 60s. And you're right. You said it was a pleasant, I think you said pleasant, I think you said manageable summer. And I recall that. You know, you'd get the thunderstorms almost like clockwork between 2 and 4 in the afternoon. When I moved back here, we moved back here in 1988, things have been changing, and they've been changing for the worse weather-wise.
Right, and the velocity of change. Now
yes.
We're seeing the velocity of change. And talking about, I live in the just north of River Road and the start of the foothills and First Avenue area. And I had never seen that intensity of a storm.
No.
I guess it's been 2.5 or 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
The wind was like, boy, I've never seen it this way.
Mm-hmm. You're right. And a gentleman came out to assess our roof. Luckily, it's still okay. This gentleman has been doing roofs in the Tucson area since the mid-60s. And this guy really has seen it all. He said, Bill, I have never seen the kind of the wind that we saw and the kind of damage in the central foothills in the region that you and I live in, Ken.
Right. And the other thing that'd be fascinating is next summer. If I think right now a lot of people, and especially the people that are debating about water and growth and all those issues that have always been in debate in Tucson, if we have another summer like this one again, it's all bets are off. People are really going to start thinking, how are we going to manage this?
I think you're right. I've been thinking about this, and I think at some point in Tucson there's a tipping point. And like you say, if we have another one with a lot of damage, and people are going to think, do I want to stay?
Right. And what Tucson used to be before air conditioning, it was really a 9-month town to live in for most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then people, if you had the money, you went to the coast. If you're not, you prepared for summer. But now we're essentially a year-round economy, and I don't know how we would manage this. I have friends in Phoenix, their summer utility bills, and they don't have a big house, $400 a month.
Oh, my goodness. That does not surprise me.
You can ask to run all night.
Yeah.
The air conditioning runs all night.
Yeah, and it's not just a few hundred degree days. I think we blew past that record. Was it 39 straight days had been the record for the number of 100 degree days? I think we're in the mid 50s.
110 degree days. We've set a new record for 100 week after week. So
and 100 degree record. Now we're in the mid 50s of consecutive days over 100. But I mean, this declining water and the global warming is becoming Tucson, Arizona's story of, unfortunately, of the 21st century so far.
It really has. So it'll be makes you want to hang around to see how it turns out. But it's very fascinating. For somebody that's like myself that's followed Tucson history and all these things, how we're finally going to have to deal with declining water and warming up. We're going to need a whole different way of looking at development and sustainability. And
yes.
I don't know when we're ready for that politically.
Yeah, I know. And, you know, we talk so much about water on the show, and we are in better. I will grant the fact that we are in better shape than Phoenix water-wise. We've been banking water in the Avra Valley, and we do have more water supply. But the long-term sustainability is something, if you're living in Tucson, Arizona, believe me, you're asking that question, Ken Scoville.
Yes. And the thing is, we're at the end of the straw. We're at the end of all the pumping stations. And one thing, just very quickly, when people talk about we got 5 or 6 years as stored, we still don't know how much is in underground aquifer. You look at the people who do the tree ring dating, mm-hmm. and what do you do if you have a 100-year drought or 150-year?
I know.
Fascinating.
Yeah, in summary, you made some really good points. You sent me a little item here. It said, the greatest element of change in the 19th century for Tucson was the arrival of the railroad. I'll grant that. Then you said the 20th century, the automobile and air conditioning. And then we've talked a little bit about what we both believe are the key points and issues and challenges for the 21st century. But really, the establishment of the U of A and Davis-Monthan really played a huge impact.
Oh, yes, because you think about how enriching the experience of bringing people from around the world, not only for the Air Force Base and the military, but also the university, culture, sports, all these things you just can't imagine. And I would not want to live in a city without a university. Obviously, it's a two-edged sword. There's a lot of political issues related to the university. But I wouldn't want to live in a place without a university because of all the amenities.
I agree. Ken Scoville, very good conversation. We'll catch up with you down the road. Thanks, Ken.
Sure. Bye.
All right. Historian Ken Scoville, always a pleasure having him on the program. On behalf of Ken and John, engineering and producing the show, my name is Bill Buckmaster. We're with you Monday through Friday, 12:04 to 1. Stay well. Hope everybody has a great afternoon.